Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. During this pandemic, who cares for the caregivers? Dr. Clarissa Barnes is a hospitalist with Avera Health. She also serves as the medical director of LIGHT. This program offers all Avera physicians, physician assistants, and nurse practitioners free wellness resources. And she joins us on the phone right now. Dr. Barnes, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, this program, LIGHT, tell people what it stands for and give us an idea. This is not a new program. This is something Avera has had for providers in place, although now its importance is definitely being highlighted.
Yeah, no, LIGHT's existed for years now. At this point, I'm glad we did that when we did.
Right.
But the idea is that, you know, there's a lot of unique challenges for people in healthcare, and certainly we've seen nationally a lot of increasing problems with burnout or physician suicide. And so we wanted to have a resource specific to people in those professions to help them sort of, raise awareness of the barriers to, you know, helping make them well, as well as helping them find sort of their own solutions.
Right. So providers are already under a certain amount of pressure, particularly rural healthcare providers. Tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that exist in rural South Dakota.
Currently I practice in Sioux Falls, but I've worked in Pierre, I've worked in Yankton, so I've worked in, you know, smaller areas around the state. And some of that is, you know, you're just more alone, right? Like, you don't have 12 other subspecialists who can sort of come in 10 minutes later and give you, you know, answers to questions. You're responsible for a lot more, and you have to sort of be a little bit more creative. Obviously, the distance is also problematic. I mean, to need to see someone else. I mean, if you want to go from Pierre to Sioux Falls, I mean, that's a day trip for a patient. That's a big deal. And so if you need to do that, you have to make sure that it's really worth it for them.
Yeah. Give us an idea of how this program is sort of expanding or, you know, serving, because the need is greater than ever amongst healthcare providers right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're doing a couple things. You know, I think part of it is it's helpful to have people, you know, who are willing to talk about the things that we don't normally want to talk about. Mm. I mean, I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had with physicians or other healthcare providers over the last couple weeks, where they're talking about what they're afraid of, or they're talking about how do I keep my family safe? And then when I tell them, like, I have these conversations all the time, other people around you worry about these things too. Like, they're shocked. They're like, I feel so much better to know that I'm not the only person, like, trying to figure some of these things out. So historically, we still have a little ways to go in terms of sort of being willing to open up about the things that are on our minds. And we really want to try and normalize that, because there's strength in numbers and knowing that you're in this together.
Yeah. One of the things that's been difficult, you know, for people in South Dakota is we've had a little more time to prepare, which is excellent, you know, compared to what's, you know, what you see in, say, in New York City or somewhere like that. But it also, and that preparation is good, but it also gives time for that anxiety to build and for that sense of dread to build, and for healthcare providers to look at the stories that are coming out of some other hospitals in Detroit and New York City, where, you know, physicians are getting sick and nurses are getting sick, and also having to make really difficult choices, even when you look at what's happened in Italy and beyond. How are you sort of working with people to say it's important to learn the lessons from those places, but it's also important not to give in to that sense of inevitability and dread?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, this time is a gift. It helps us be more prepared, but it's also a curse, because it allows us to really think about these things longer and to sort of see what other people are doing. I think you really have to sort of, you know, say it's okay. You know, it's okay to be nervous, right? It's okay to be afraid of what's happening. It's okay to see what other people have had to experience and to think about sort of, you know, well, what if I'm in those situations? What choices am I going to make? I think actually once we're really more in the middle of it, it'll actually be a little bit better. You know, I think healthcare, you know, physicians and nurse practitioners and physicians assistants, like, when crises happen, like, we just do. I think once we're actually doing more, I think actually it'll be a little bit better. You know, I just finished a week on McKinnon's COVID unit, and yeah, you still have a little bit of anxiety, but it's actually a little bit easier when you're just like, I'm getting the work done, and I will deal with, you know, whatever, you know, anxiety I have after it's over, you know. So
yeah.
I think that once we're in it, you know, and there's really a lot more of it for people, it actually will be a little bit.
Yeah. There's also a sense. Yeah. there is in a sense, and nobody's really talking about this, but I'm curious if people are saying this to you, where many of these healthcare providers, they got in the business to save people's lives. They got in the business to be of service. They got in this business. They have, with so many people who are out of work right now and are struggling with that transition, there's also great meaning in this, and hopefully not great sacrifice, but there is also a call to action, and these people are on the front lines. Are you also hearing people who are, stepping into this role and saying, this is what we've trained for. We trained for emergencies. We trained to be of service to our community. We trained to put them first. Here we go.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I feel about it. And honestly, I think, you know, when you look at the issues with physician burnout over the last several years, a lot of that is driven by all of the extra things. It's the paperwork, it's the bureaucracy, it's having to sort of, you know, bow to the insurance companies and the pharmacies. And I think the business of actually taking care of patients is what we came to this profession for. Mm. And so spending more time actually doing that, I think, is going to be very centering for a lot of physicians. You know, it's really more aligned with our core values of why we came to this calling in the first place. So I think for some people, it's going to be a little bit, you know, it's going to be stressful for a while, but I think at the end of it, there's also going to be a real feeling of, that's why I picked this profession. This is why I was chosen for this. I'm glad that I'm doing more of that again.
Right. So much about being in this profession can be overwhelming. In this case, there is, you know, many people are training, you know, to do things that maybe they, you know, they're healthcare providers, but this wasn't their specialty. And now they're training to do something new. And they're volunteering for that at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've got friends, you know, who are subspecialists or surgeons, and they're asking, like, okay, well, what do I need to look at to remind myself about vent management? I used to do that, but I haven't done it recently. Or people, you know, who are medicine subspecialists who used to do inpatient work, but now do, you know, their subspecialty clinic. They're pulling things out and be like, okay, I'm ready. Put me in. You know, people aren't running away and saying, I'm not comfortable. They're volunteering to sort of say, I'm willing to help you because I know it's going to be all hands on deck.
Yeah. So let's talk about how those hands stay healthy, because, you know, we want, when we look at this whole concept of flattening a curve, of course, the curve is meaningless if the number of healthcare providers drops. So in some ways, it's easy. It's not easy to make beds, but it's easier to increase that kind of capacity than it is to get more ventilators, than it is to get the right staff if the staff starts falling ill and unable to come to work, either because they've been exposed to the virus or because they have other health issues that are coming up because of chronic stress. So let's talk a little bit about keeping them healthy and start with personal protective equipment. And what has the call been for that to sort of just keep them safe from exposure to begin with?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with our state. I think, you know, all of the, you know, healthcare organizations have been very clear that, you know, they're one of their priorities is to keep the people working safe. You know, they're not asking people to do things that are unsafe, and they're really trying to be creative in how they make sure that they have the appropriate supplies to do that. I know it's been difficult because a lot of those supplies, I mean, if you order things, they're going to get, a lot of them get diverted, right? Because New York's in, you know, a big crisis. They're going to say we're going to send the truck to New York. But I think it's also hard for physicians, right? I mean, if somebody is in trouble, like, our instinct is to run into the room and want to help them.
Right.
But dead doctors can't help anybody. And so you do have to make a little bit of shift of, you can't just run into rooms. You really have to put your gear on, because you're not being a hero by putting yourself at risk. And in fact, you're putting everybody at risk then, because if you're exposed, then that's more work other people have to do on your behalf. You know, that's more stress on your family. So it's a little bit counterintuitive, but if you read the stories from, you know, physicians who used to take care of people with Ebola in different places in Africa, it's like, you know, that sort of feeling of heroism to running into a room with nothing on gets you nowhere but sick.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about how testing is working for healthcare providers, because we've heard a lot about the prioritization of that. Because if a doctor or a nurse practitioner or a nurse is exposed, are they able to get the kind of testing that would help them get back to work if they were asymptomatic? Because, you know, we all know by now, I think, that this is a virus you can be a carrier of for quite some time without showing any symptoms, which makes things more challenging. How is testing of healthcare providers set up to take care of them?
I think we're getting to that point. You know, right now the testing is just so, it's so fluid, like it's changing on a day-to-day basis. I mean, you know, a couple weeks ago, everything was going to the state lab, and it's like, well, now we've got other places that can do the test, but it takes, you know, a couple-day turnaround to now this week, we're going to finally have access to some tests that are, you know, more like a 45-minute turnaround, which is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So I think that if you ask me today what the testing plan is and tomorrow what the testing plan is, it may not be the same. You know, it's sort of always changing, but I think the ideal state, when we've seen places that have been most successful, it is, in fact, testing all of your workers on some sort of basis to make sure that you're not sending people in who are asymptomatic carriers.
Right.
I think we're probably not quite there yet. But, I mean, they have been places that have been very successful with that.
The importance is there, though, that the value. I mean, you get the idea that the value is being placed on it and that it's being built to that point, even if, you know, we're never at full capacity. Do you think people are taking that seriously?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I think there isn't enough testing and supplies to even, you know, to test in that way. But I think that is a goal, and I think we're trying to get there.
Yeah. Let's talk about keeping people on their feet from the other things, from the burnout and from the exhaustion and from the trauma that can be from working long hours. What are some strategies going in for healthcare providers that, you know, if they're listening, you know, what are some of the things that they can do to build resiliency now? Because there's going to be days when those reserves are going to be tested.
Yeah, I think most people inherently know, like, these are the kinds of things I need to keep myself well, you know, whatever that happens to be. So if you're the kind of person where it's like, I need to run every day, like, now is not the time to negotiate that away. Like, you need to keep doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I think for other people, it's going to be different things. It's going to be, you know, a hobby or a conversation with somebody who, you know, means a lot to them. I think it's important to have some sort of, you know, almost like an early alert system, like somebody in your life who can tell you that maybe you're getting a little bit more stressed out than you realize. Because I think it's a little hard. Sometimes we don't even know. We're so in the middle of it that it takes somebody else to say, hey, I think you need to take a step back and, you know, eat a snack and go for a run, or you need to have, you know, whatever it happens to be. You know, you can't just rely on yourself to sort of be the only person looking out for you. You need somebody else sort of helping you out.
Yeah, my family, in my family, that's my daughter who says you're not the only one who's doing this work, Mom. You know, you can, you're not the only one. So she, you know, is constantly reminding me that, you know, that we're not alone in the work that we're doing as journalists. And that's something I think for healthcare providers too, to just say, you know, you don't have to take care of every single patient. You can't carry the burden, you know, for all of humanity. You can only do what's right in front of you right now as best you can.
Yeah, but they want to try. I mean, that's the feeling that we all sort of carry with us, is that I have to do it. I have to do everything. And it's very, very hard to sort of be vulnerable enough to say, I can't do this. I have to do this for me, or I'm not going to be any good to anybody.
Right.
That's a hard thing.
Yeah. It's all about longevity right now. And that can be weeks. You know, there could be weeks. And when we talk about, we are all talking about the peak, but for these people, I mean, there are patients in the hospital now that they're, you know, dealing with their healthcare needs, and those numbers, you know, of cases is rising exponentially. That peak is coming fast.
Yeah, I think, you know, when people initially looked at this, they thought, okay, well, I'm going to do these things, you know, whatever they happen to be, or I'm going to distance my family and live in the guest room, and I'm going to do this for, oh, you know, it's going to be like a week or two. But people are finding, I actually know it's going to be more weeks. It's going to be quite a while. And so you really have to build in, what are the things I need to do to make myself, you know, well, and do them, and not let, you know, the exhaustion of work convince yourself that you can't do them. You have to make the time, or it's going to be a very long several weeks.
Right. Do you have sort of that kind of, you know, daily, I mean, does a doctor, does a healthcare provider have someone to call at the end of the day if they really need some kind of crisis intervention, if they're having a hard time, you know, dealing with things? Is it, you know, has that shifted at all through the Light program or through Avera?
Yeah, I mean, I think historically light's been sort of more business hours, but at the beginning of this, you know, both myself and our director, you know, put out our emails and our cell phone numbers, and we said, you know, call me anytime. Like, if the physician is in the ER and something happens at 3 a.m. and they really need to, like, talk to someone, like, they can call me, and that's okay. There's other resources for critical instances, you know, sort of built into the system for, you know, from long before this. So there's always somebody available to talk to. I think for us, it's not just making sure it's available because it's available, but also making sure people know that it really is okay to call and not to try and shoulder all this yourself.
And that other people are calling too. And that's another challenge, is when people think, oh, you know, other people have, you know, it's not so bad for me. Other people have it worse off, that you can get stuck in this trap that you don't need to reach out because you want to leave room for somebody else to reach out. And that can be kind of muddied thinking. Go ahead and make that call, right?
Yeah, no, I think if you're wondering, should I call someone? Then the answer is yes. You know, I think that's the line.
Yeah. if that sort of early alert person in your life says, maybe we should call somebody, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
As well. Let's talk about what happens afterwards, in the sense that at some point there's a peak, you know, we hopefully rise to the occasion and the capacity is not overwhelmed, because South Dakotans are doing what they need to do right now with social distancing. Doctors, you know, the best case scenario, doctors and healthcare providers, you know, provide the best care possible, save as many people as they can. Going forward, this changes everything in a generation of healthcare providers. There can be trauma that your body will take forward. There can be anxiety that your body will take forward. There are losses that you will take forward. Is there a way to plan for that now, so that when we know it's coming, we can navigate it as best as we can?
Yeah, it's hard because I do think that there will be trauma. You know, I think for most of us, every time a patient dies, like, it leaves a little bit of a wound that stays with us forever. Mm-hmm. I remember everybody I've ever known and I'm taking care of who died. You know, that those are stories I carry with me forever. And there's going to be a lot more stories in the next couple weeks. But I also don't know that you can necessarily know how any individual is going to react. You know, some people may end up with, you know, sort of a PTSD-like syndrome after this is over, but other people may find that this really, you know, instigates some real personal growth, you know, that they found that they were nervous about what was going to happen, and they did it anyway, and they found that they had a lot of courage, and they felt really good about that. So it's hard to know how any individual is going to do. I think as a group, we know there's going to be people who are, you know, going to struggle afterwards, and we're already sort of making some plans for how we deal with that, you know, probably increased need from sort of baseline. You know, we've got some overflow plans and some access to some other, you know, mental health professionals that we may have to utilize.
Yeah. What's your advice or what's your message to South Dakotans not in healthcare who are facing some of those challenges of staying at home a little longer than they thought they were going to have to, of keeping distance from people they deeply care about a little longer than they thought they would have to? They're getting a little itchy or antsy. Is this really worth it? What do you think you would like to say to the people who are asking you, are the efforts we're putting in now making a difference?
I think it's, if you're making those efforts, then I'm very thankful. You know, I see my husband. I mean, he's staying at home. He's single parent, essentially, at this point, to our three children and homeschool teacher. You know, this has been very difficult for him and for lots of people in very similar positions. And I get it. I mean, it's stir crazy. It's, you know, it's maddening. It's very difficult. But I also know, I look at the numbers and I say, well, you know, if we get to the point where we have more sick people than we have places to put them, or more ventilators or more staff, like, you're taking, you know, what's going to be a traumatic pandemic for us, and you're making it worse, because now there's going to have to be, you know, a lot of other sort of discussions about, well, how do we choose? How do we get, you know, 10 ventilators when we have 20 people? You know, those sorts of things are very difficult. And you know, not choices that I think anybody wants to have to make. We don't want to be in a New York situation where, you know, you have physicians saying, well, we have, you know, codes every hour and people intubated sitting in the ER. I think that sounds, you know, terribly traumatic. So if you're willing to, you know, be inconvenienced so that we don't have to go through that trauma, then I'm very appreciative. Please stick it out.
Please stick it out. Dr. Clarissa Barnes is a hospitalist, and she's medical director of Avera's Light program, and she joined us on the phone today from Sioux Falls. Dr. Barnes, thank you so much, and be well in the days ahead. We appreciate all you're doing for us and all you're about to do for people in South Dakota.
All right. Thank you so much.